So let's read John 21. After these things, Jesus showed himself again to the disciples at the Sea of Tiberias, and in this way he showed himself. Simon Peter, Thomas, called the twin, Nathanael of Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, then the two others of his disciples were together. Simon Peter said to them, "I am going fishing." They said to him, "We're going with you also." They went out and immediately got into the boat, and that night they caught nothing. But when the morning had now come, Jesus stood on the shore, yet the disciples did not know that it was Jesus. Then Jesus said to them, "Children, have you any food?" They answered him, "No." And he said to them, "Cast the net on the right side of the boat, and you will find some." So they cast, and now they were not able to draw it in because of the multitude of fish. Therefore, the disciple whom Jesus loved said to Peter, "It is the Lord." Now when Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he put on his outer garment, for he had removed it, and plunged into the sea. But the other disciples came in the little boat, for they were not far from the land, but about 200 cubits, dragging the net with fish. Then as soon as they had come to the land, they saw a fire of coals there, and fish laid on it, and bread. Jesus said to them, "Bring some of the fish which you have just caught." Simon Peter went up and dragged the net to land, filled of large fish, 153. And although there were so many, the net was not broken. Jesus said to them, "Come and eat breakfast." Yet none of the disciples dared ask him, "Who are you?" knowing that it was the Lord. Jesus then came and took the bread and gave it to them, and likewise the fish. This is now the third time Jesus showed himself to his disciples after he was raised from the dead. So when they had eaten breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me more than these?" He said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." He said to him, "Feed my lambs." He said to him again a second time, "Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me?" He said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." He said to him, "Tend my sheep." He said to him the third time, "Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me?" Peter was grieved because he had said to him a third time, "Do you love me?" And he said to him, "Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you." Jesus said to him, "Feed my sheep. Most assuredly, I say to you, when you were younger, you girded yourself and walked where you wished. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands, and another will gird you and carry you where you do not wish." This he spoke, signifying by what death he would glorify God. And when he had spoken this, he said to him, "Follow me." Then Peter, turning around, saw the disciple whom Jesus loved following, who also had leaned on his breast at the supper, and said, "Lord, who is the one who betrays you?" Peter, seeing him, said to Jesus, "But Lord, what about this man?" Jesus said to him, "If I will that he will remain till I come, what is that to you? You follow me." Then this saying went out among the brethren that this disciple would not die. Yet Jesus did not say to him that he would not die, "But if I will that he remain till I come, what is that to you?" Let's all stand and pray.
We have now been in a series called The Life and Times of Jesus for over 3 years. This is 144 messages out of this series so far. Next week we will cover the ascension of Jesus Christ and come to at least rest. We're not done with this subject matter. We're going to go into the coming of the Holy Spirit in Acts, and then on into Revelation and Daniel, and into the second coming of Jesus Christ, because we know the life of Jesus is far from over. We may take a rest for a little while. I would love to teach one of the epistles. I mean, I've enjoyed the Gospels, but I'd like to get into some of the practical application of our Christian life. We'll see how that goes. But I appreciate you indulging me. I pray that you have been blessed as we've gone through this series over the past few years. Today, we are dealing with the redemption of the Apostle Peter. If you've been here, you know the story. We have been here for quite some time. And I'm dealing with Peter, and we would like now just to look at this story in the application of our own lives. When we read in Luke 17, 32 and 33, it says this: "Remember Lot's wife. Whoever seeks to preserve his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life will keep it." Remember Lot's wife. Now, some of you may be very familiar with what that means, and some of you may not. In Genesis chapter 19, we read of God's destruction of the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah. It is one of those famous stories. We read of the rescue of Lot and his family out of Sodom and Gomorrah. If you know the story, you know that the angels were having a tough time getting Lot out of there. He was hesitant. He was fearful of life outside of the world that he had known. Now, there seems, at least on the surface, to be no logical explanation of that kind of action and reaction. But apparently, even the wickedness of Sodom, in there is at least some, comfort of familiarity, I would say. Such, it seems, will almost always trump uncertainty and ambiguity, the comfort of familiarity. The angels, and they pushed hard, and they instructed them all to run and to not look back. But again, most of us are familiar with the account. And as God rained down fire and burning sulfur upon the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah, we are told in the account that Lot's wife did indeed look back, and she was turned into a pillar of salt. I think as much as we might desire this morning to move forward in our grace, we find often that our past still pulls at us, calling us back to a place that we ironically seem to remember as warm and comfortable. It seems it is not enough to just recognize and regret our sin to truly leave it behind. We must learn to hate it. Lot's wife was literally dragged free from her life of self-focus. She had been and was being rescued from imminent pain and, of course, ultimate death. And the consequences of both of these individually and corporate sins upon the life. I mean, she was dealing with her sin. Sodom and Gomorrah was dealing with their sin. And so she was encompassed. Yet she, despite this salvation, was still looking longly and lingeringly upon her past, even as that very past was being literally consumed by the wrath of God. I mean, she didn't want to die. I don't think any of us naturally want to die, but she didn't really want to leave her own life either. And so she did what we all do when we find ourselves in that place, and that is we hesitate. Frankly, we often simply stop. Many of us are Lot's wife this morning. We preserve deep within us memories of sin savored in the years past. I mean, let's face it, we see it mostly for what it is, but we do not hate it, not really. In times of physical and mental and even spiritual loneliness and exhaustion and discouragement and despair, we inevitably, quietly, privately reminisce. We dream always of a revisionist version of times past, don't we? One where we leave out the dark and painful consequences of our conduct and the inevitable change and destructive change of the trajectory of our lives. I think so often in these scenarios, we fail to paint an honest portrayal of the personal history of our lives. We dream scenarios, albeit privately, of re-engaging those times on some level. Even in our newfound and glorious freedom that Christ has bestowed upon us, the skeletal remains of our past still hang in our closet. It's behind a door that we symbolically pass each day of our lives. And sometimes we even crack the door a little and peer into the darkness on the other side. Our story today, I think we all would agree, begins with an air of near tangible weariness. I mean, no one could argue that the events of the weeks that were prior to this text were exhausting and frankly knee-buckling for everybody involved. All the apostles had been wrung through the wringer in such a way as to never forget, albeit quite possibly never truly understand. Everybody was tired. The wave of doubt and emotion and confusion had rendered them nearly paralyzed, unable and quite unwilling to move forward. Like Lot's wife, they were stuck in their very steps. And finally, in this mind-numbing state, Peter decides, I'm going fishing. So back to the beginning of the story. Back to the beginning of Peter. Back to where Jesus found him. Back again to his old life. History and legend have much to say about this man, Peter. Tradition describes him as a big man with rough fisherman's hands. Older than the rest of the apostles, with a personality that made him both a leader yet also quite unpredictable. We find him naturally impulsive there on the Mount of Transfiguration. We find him tender-hearted and affectionate when Jesus washed his feet there in the upper room. He could be at one point so self-sacrificing. I mean, he left his business and his whole world and his family to follow Jesus. And then suddenly he could be inclined to self-seeking. Remember back in Matthew 19, he asked Jesus, well, what's in all this for us? He was a man gifted with spiritual insight. He once told Jesus, "Where else shall we go?" But then in a moment, he could be slow to understand deeper truths. Back in Matthew 15, he asked for an explanation of the parable Jesus told. He was really an embodiment of an enigma. And yet, at the same time, he was an every man. He deemed it all hard now to understand this man who had come to the end of himself. Peter was done. He was going to go back to fishing. Jesus once told Peter, "Peter, Satan longs to sift you like wheat." That must have been something to hear Jesus say to him. I mean, 1 Peter 5:8 warns us of the very same thing. He says, "Stay alert. Stay alert. Watch out for your great enemy, the devil. He prowls around like a roaring lion looking for someone to devour." So our text this morning finds Peter quite likely awash in guilt, in loneliness, and in confusion. And in true human form, he doesn't move in this situation, no, but he runs just as we do. Back to our sin, back to the world that we knew before. Perhaps Peter had returned to fishing that day because he just didn't know what else to do. I mean, in his heart, I think for Peter it was over. There was simply no fixing what had happened. He had failed his master. But then something wonderful happened. Something that so often, and I think inexplicably, happens in these kind of moments of our lives. And maybe you can identify here this morning. Because the last person that we expect to find down there at our spiritual bottom is Jesus Christ. At the moment that we feel the farthest away from him, I assure you, he is right there beside you. And so, for the second time, Peter casts his nets in disbelief. And for the second time, he pulls them up, overflowing with fish. The first time was at his calling. "Follow me, Peter, and I will make you fisher of men." And now, some 3 years and no doubt hundreds of miles later, Jesus meets him where he's at once again. Then John utters those words that have echoed down through the centuries. "It's the Lord. It's the Lord." Now, certainly this morning, gang, my personal experience does not prove the text. I wouldn't want you to ever think that it's otherwise. And I don't believe that even the experiences of so very many men and women that are here this morning, or many that I have known down through the years, they also don't prove the text. However, for whatever it's worth this morning, I believe John's words were a tidal wave on Peter's soul. Peter could stand it no longer. You see, Peter was at the crossroads of his life. Peter was like so many of us who have followed. And what occurred that day in that boat was more powerful, hear me now, was actually more powerful and more enduring than even what happened back at the beginning. Back when Jesus first came to him, this was even more powerful than that moment. For in such a day as this, guys, the truth is our eyes are far more open. Our minds are far more open to our understanding than we were at the beginning. Because, you know, let's face it, back at the beginning, we were like children, weren't we? all wide-eyed and starstruck? I mean, we took Jesus into our boats with hearts of awe. I don't believe that we understood at that point what it all meant. How could we? We, like Peter, we didn't have any idea what the road ahead would hold for us. We didn't understand the cost, did we? We knew nothing of what it was like to be hunted by a roaring lion, stalked and persecuted by Satan in the world. But we also knew nothing of what it was and what it meant to be possessed by a living God. That had to be experienced. We were like children, not grasping what it meant to be part of turning the world upside down, or having ours turned upside down by being a part of such. John 14:8 promises us, "I will not abandon you as orphans. I will come to you. I will come to you. I will not abandon you." And I think John's words sucked the very air out of Peter's lungs. It's the Lord. Travis Kaufman, age 31, you may have read about him in the past couple weeks. He was running on a scenic trail in Fort Collins area on the afternoon of February 4th. When he heard a rustling of pine needles, and he turned his head to see a small mountain lion about 10 feet from him, and the lion lunged. He said that as he tried to throw the lion off of him, they both tumbled down a slope on the side of the trail. And from there, it was just a wrestling match, he said. Kaufman said he's about 5'10", weighing between 150 and 155 pounds. That's right where I'm at. So take a good look of me fighting a mountain lion, okay? Once he was able to get on top of the animal and pin its back legs, Kaufman said he tried to use a free hand to grab sticks to stab the lion's neck. But those kept breaking, so he reached for a large rock to hit it on its head, and that didn't work either. He was finally able to maneuver one of his legs up, and then I stepped on its neck and was eventually able to suffocate it. Now, while this account absolutely amazed me, it was what was said next in this interview with Kaufman that impacted me the most. Because, let's face it, for most of us, we just would have rolled over. I mean, this is a mountain lion, right? So I'm a dead man. It's finished. But you see, Kaufman said that he had a moment to decide, fight or die. Fight or die. And he said he went into pure survival mode. And he said this. He said that he decided that he would not end on that mountainside that day. The interview went on to say this, and this is the part that gets me. Kaufman said he was reluctant to come forward publicly at first because he felt uncomfortable getting attention for, quote, a situation of happenstance, end quote, and he, quote, would never be able to live up to the reputation, end quote. And the last thing he said, quote, the story is bigger than my puny form, end quote. Yes. It always is. This was Peter that day. That's where Peter stood that day. At that moment, on that day, on that boat, he was not going to end on that boat fishing that day. That was not going to be his end. He was not going to end fishing like everything was just the same as it was before. Because things would never be what they were before. Things could never be what they were before. It was too late. Too much water under the bridge. Too far to go back. He knew too much. He saw too much. He experienced too much. And in that moment, Peter had to decide. Run. Roll over and die. Or fight. Run. Roll over and die. Or get up and fight. I think for all practical purposes, Peter struck a match and tossed it on board as he turned to swim to shore that day. There would be no more fishing for fish anymore. He now was going to go and truly be a fisher of men. It took him 3 years. But now he had decided. As long as Peter, you see, had someplace to go back, the temptation would always be there. Christian, as long as you have someplace to go back to, the temptation will always be there. As long as we hold on to that memory and we reminisce about the good old days back in the world, it will always call us. And it will always pull us backward. On shore, on that day, events played out to forever change Peter's life and path. Please notice that once Peter did come to shore and sat with Jesus, Jesus did not soft pedal Peter's calling and his mission. I mean, he didn't pat Peter on the head and tell him everything was going to be okay. And you know why? Because everything wasn't going to be okay. And how we wish sometimes Jesus would do that. He'd put his arm around you and say, there now, you know, it'll be all right. It's not going to be all right. Come on, Christian, you know, it'll get easier from here. No, it won't. Everything wasn't going to be okay. In verse 21, Jesus speaks of these things to come. He says, I tell you the truth, when you were young, you were able to do as you liked. You dressed yourself and you went wherever you wanted to go. But when you're old, you will stretch out your hands and others will dress you and take you where you don't want to go. Most of you know that church history tells us that Peter died of crucifixion. Oh yes, some years down the line, but he would die. And again, church history tells us that he requested to purposely be crucified upside down because he didn't want to die the way his master died. He didn't retire to Florida. There was no 401k waiting for him. No retirement benefits. No hanging out with the grandkids. No, Peter died a terrible death. And Jesus never told him anything other. Christian, I'd love to tell you today that it'll all be okay, but it won't. I would love to tell you today that if you become a Christian, that you're on Easy Street and all your dreams will come true and it'll just be lovely and, you know, no bad things will ever happen to you and you'll always have some money in your wallet and all of that stuff. But it isn't true. And you may find me this morning the worst salesman there is, but being a Christian, that's not the easy road. That's the hard road. It's to be a lot easier just to, you know, keep your head down, hang out, wait it out. Not true Christianity, not disciple Christianity, which, by the way, is the only real Christianity. No, the road ahead would be no easier than the road behind. But Peter, do you love me? You see, at that point in our lives, when we all stand at that critical junction, we tend to reason out every aspect and we tend to question every element. But at the end of the day, when all of the excuses and the reasonings and everything is set aside, it will always and only come back to that one question. Do you love me? Do you love him? You don't understand, Pastor, I have a really good excuse. Do you love him? You don't know what I've been through. I don't. Do you love him? Did he ever promise you that it would be easy? Do you love him? You see, this morning, gang, we may have all originally come to Jesus Christ because maybe we were broken, maybe we feared death. Maybe you made that initial decision for Jesus Christ because of some sort of religious mores or pressures or because of family or peers that were around you. I mean, we may have left our boat at the beginning because we were wowed by the miraculous that we witnessed. But in the end, after our eyes have been opened to the reality and the cost of following Jesus Christ, we burn the bridge back to our own lives, old lives, because of one and only one reason. Do you love him? We have no scriptural record of Peter ever looking back again after this day. It seems he was done with fishing that day. He's on a mission now. How I would have loved to have known his thoughts that were running through his mind as he swam to shore. I mean, for those of us that know the life of Peter, we know his mistakes were not over. I mean, Peter's shortcomings weren't suddenly and miraculously vanished. But the bridge of return seems to have been burned. Verse 11 of our text inexplicably gives us the exact number of the fish that were caught that morning. 153. And I know exactly why that is. No, I don't. But don't you find that interesting? 153. I mean, that's extremely specific, even for the Bible, isn't it? Not 150, not, you know, somewhere in the area of 150. Not 160, 100. And 50 fish. And the thing is, they counted them. That's the amazing thing. Why was this recorded for all of eternity. As I say, I don't really know, but I could only imagine, because Jesus just wanted everyone to know he wasn't messing around. Peter, if you give up fishing and you come and follow me, I will overflow your life with not only what you need, but with the bounty of life itself. Now, please don't misunderstand me. I am not preaching a prosperity promise. But 1 Corinthians 2:9 says this: eye has not seen, nor ear heard, nor has even entered into the heart of man the things which God has prepared for those who love him. Some of you, that is merely a promise today. And some of you look back in your life and you acknowledge that it's a fact. And I am one of those. Coming up in a couple of months here is our 30th anniversary of this church. And by the way, a little sidebar. Before I began this morning, my wife leaned over to me and said, this text was the very first text that she heard from Dave Gonzalez when she walked into that room the very first Sunday. How's that for irony? But when I think back now over all the years of ministry, my mind is flooded with the faces of those who I have known, people I have loved that stood at this moment of truth, and they turned back, and they're gone. They were those who were once enlightened, those who have experienced the good things of heaven. They shared in the Holy Spirit. They have tasted the goodness of the Word of God and the power of the age to come, and who then turned away from God. I could fill this church 10 times over. But then, thankfully, there are faces here this morning. As I look out into this audience and I see today those who came to that moment and you jumped. And that has made it worth it all. You jumped in and you swam to Jesus and you left your old life in the past and you embraced a new life that rolled out before you. And today, well, today you are here because your answer ultimately was, Lord, to whom else shall we go? Where else would we go? Now perhaps this morning, as we approach the end of the Gospels, maybe someone in our midst today is standing in Peter's shoes. Maybe this morning you wonder if there is a way back to that kind of redemption. After all, this Christian thing, man, it can be hard sometimes. You're looking back over your shoulder today, and you are at this moment deciding whether to stay in your boat or whether you will jump and swim. Today, you too will either run and you will die, or you will fight. There are those who are here amongst us today that won't be here. Because we are making that decision. Run, die, or fight. I ask you, will your life end here today? Will you end here today? Or do you want more than this? Peter, do you love me? We live in an age where many churches will try to sell you that used car. We'll try to convince you to be a Christian. I have no such obligation. I'm not here to put sugar on it this morning. Being a Christian is tough. I'm not talking about being a churchgoer. You can live here in Dunn County and drop into church once in a while someplace. Probably not here. This will just make you uncomfortable. You can go to church and everything will be fine. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about being a Christian. Biblical. But I will never tell you that it's going to be easy, and I will never try to make you think somehow that it's a Disneyland journey, because it's not. It's hard. At times it can be lonely. It's sacrificial. And I wouldn't trade it for the world. Not for any of it. But for many of you, that's just words this morning. Because you're still standing in your boat trying to make up your mind. And this morning you know too much. You're not starstruck. You're not wide-eyed. You're not blind to the truth. No, you know, and that's the problem. Peter, do you love me? Because I assure you this morning, that is the only thing that will get you through. That is the only thing that will get you out of that boat. That's the only thing that'll keep you going every day until he comes back for you. Peter, do you love me? This morning, I think he's asking some of us to stop looking in the mirror. It's not about us. Get out of the boat and feed my sheep. Feed my sheep. Let's stand.